This is the Uncover You podcast, and I'm Eva Beronius. I'm here to help you navigate your transformational journey so you can experience the you underneath the conditioning and unconscious beliefs. You always find the show notes over at selfmasteryandbeyond.com, and you're welcome to join me live for these sessions over Zoom. Let's get to the core of things. Here's today's episode. This is the second out of four episodes where we're diving into the journey from the head into the heart, from the mind into the body, and talk about our emotions and why maybe it's so hard to get in touch with them, to feel them, to allow ourselves to feel them. And today I have Gary Van Wormerdam with me. Hello, Gary.
Hi, Eva.
It's good to have you here. I've been on your podcast, so it's nice to be able to invite you to my podcast.
Thanks. That's good to be here. Let's see what happens.
And if there's anyone listening who doesn't know who you are, can you give a little introduction?
That's funny. About 1994, I was miserable in my life. I figured out that I wanted to be happy, and I'd forgotten how to do that with all the stress and burnout and relationship drama. And I made that my number one priority, being happy. And then very shortly after that, I met Miguel Ruiz, author of Four Agreements, mm-hmm. who I spent a number of years studying with because it went beyond being happy. It went into consciousness and heart-opening, unconditional love, and wanting my whole life to be completely different and a whole different belief system, changing process that went with that, and spiritual experiences. So, yeah, it opened up whole other worlds. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I have been teaching for the past 20 years.
Yeah.
Taking people on intensive journeys and an online program, the self-mastery course, how to change, identify all these hidden agreements and beliefs and break free of them. Mm-hmm. So that's what I've been teaching for 20 years.
Yeah. All right. Now together we're running the self-mastery community where we host different trainings and workshops in there.
And some live free stuff and various things that we feel like doing in this community experiment.
Yeah. So since the topic of this month on the podcast is about emotions and getting in touch with them, and in the last episode I gave this overview of why it might be a very good idea to start in the mind, of understanding your mind and understanding how beliefs are formed. But at a certain point, that won't be enough. Just understanding all this won't give you the change that you're looking for in your internal world. So can you tell me a little bit about how you have built the self-mastery courses in relation to this?
Well, I didn't build them with this in mind, the understanding that people need to get in touch with their emotions. I built it kind of through some trial and error practices working with clients. Those are sessions that I would work with clients on, and I do things that didn't work, and I'm like, okay, that didn't work. Let's try this, and that didn't work. Let's try this. And I found a number of exercises that worked in a certain order. So then they would routinely work, and they worked, and they worked. And so that was the refining process. So, and I got bored from always teaching the same lessons. Mm. And process, I'm going to make a recording out of this because I don't need to repeat this.
You're tired of hearing yourself saying the same thing over again.
Yeah, because what people needed to do was they needed to learn the same skills in order to get through the emotions that were making them miserable, through the stories and beliefs that were making them miserable, so they could get to the good feelings that were underneath that. And those were the same things I was teaching so that they could practice the skills. And that's like being able to hold focus of your attention, being skeptical of your thoughts, allowing yourself to be present with your emotions and not dart off and with a distraction. So those were the type of skills that you need to get past the monkey mind to feel the love underneath. And so what it ended up, not by design, but by practice, trial and error, was a course where people were able to get past their monkey mind to the emotional issues and the belief issues underneath, where the source of their drama playing out, their procrastinating behavior, their jealousy, their anger was playing out. They could get down to the source and make changes at that cause level, because they were no longer chasing thoughts or being bounced around with the thoughts at a surface level. So
you're saying this was by trial and error. Like you tried to put the practices in different order and what worked and what didn't. So was there at any point that you tried bringing people straight into the emotions and accessing their emotional and kind of what kind of results came out of that?
Now we're going back 20 years. So I did. I was more likely to do that in an in-person workshop. It's more likely to do that with, okay, let's elevate our emotions into gratitude and love if I'm talking to a client over the phone. But for people to deal with their fears or their anger or their jealousy, their insecurity, you know, our minds have been conditioned to avoid those feelings. We have all sorts of unconscious and willful strategies to avoid those uncomfortable feelings. So to take someone and say, oh, let's go, you know, acknowledge your anger and be in touch with that feeling so we can find the belief underneath, that would usually fail, you know? So what I discovered was, okay, they don't have the skill levels to go do that. And, you know, I might still try it with a client these days. You know, they've been doing my practices and we're like, and I'll watch where their attention goes. They'll go, oh, this reminds me of a story. This happened to me in my past. And I know that, like, okay, I'm asking them what they're feeling and they're telling me about a story about something that their mind jumped to. And I go, okay, they're uncomfortable with their emotions. You know, after that happens two or three times, I'm like, okay, we're not ready to go there.
Yeah.
They don't want to touch that. It's like, let's build some skills so they're comfortable feeling that first. So I listen to the response, and if they can't follow and track, then I'm like, okay, we need to build awareness of that and build a skill so they can.
And
so, yeah, I still try the shortcuts.
Yeah. And come up against different responses with that.
All the time.
And distraction. What you described now is kind of what I call, okay, that's a distractive trail that the mind pulls your attention to.
Yeah.
And would you say that that's the common response that would show up when you don't want to be with your emotions? And what are the other ones that you've experienced or seeing clients that are trying to get in touch with emotions that have been suppressed for a long time?
Well, for people who aren't able to go there and say, yeah, I feel this fear and this is where I feel it in my body. Let's talk about what it is to be present with your emotion. Like, okay, what is the feeling? Be able to hold your attention there. Name it. Is that grief? Is that sadness? Is that an anger?
Is it important to name it?
It's not important. It's not required, but it's helpful. Okay. A lot of times people go, well, I'm upset. Well, upset might be, that's kind of vague. And it might be three or four different emotions in there. Like, well, I feel hurt. I'm sad. And that's all. I'm hurt by what somebody said. I feel sad because it reminds me of something in the past that happened that was similar. And I'm angry that this person hurt me. And I'm really feeling righteous.
Yeah.
And indignant and because they shouldn't have done that. Like, so there's four or five things
that could
about,
be labeled upset.
That's labeled upset.
Yeah.
So now it becomes this emotional intelligence capability. Okay, that have their own individual beliefs. There's the hurt somebody you took personally what somebody said. There's a sadness that reminds you of previous experience where you felt sad and unworthy. Okay, there's this defensive mechanism that pops up afterwards mm-hmm. that's now judging the person who now feels like, oh, they're really bad, they shouldn't have done that, and my anger is justified.
Yeah.
And so there's this protective strategy. So now we have four that are each doing a very specific function of reminding of a hurt and a protection mm-hmm. that need to be pulled apart. If you're going to dissolve them, they don't usually just all dissolve it together at once.
Yeah,
they can, but for somebody who's starting out, you know, best to do it in steps. Mm-hmm. Take one of those at a time. Mm-hmm. So that's the ability of naming them that becomes helpful.
Yeah.
You know, instead of like, oh, he made me upset. It's like, that's a low emotional intelligence about what's going on when there's four detailed ones.
And where we often start out.
And where we start out.
Yeah.
We're in the narrative story of blaming the other person, which is kind of the lowest level or a low level of emotional intelligence and ability to change when you don't even acknowledge that you could change some of these things because if they're responsible, they have the power. Mm-hmm. They did this to me. They made me angry. Well, then you're just, you know, you don't have any agency to change some of these dynamics. So taking responsibility for your emotions is, you know, a big step forward.
Okay. But so naming them, giving them names is part of the being with emotions, right? More steps with being with them.
I'm not mapping out a process. To be able to relax your body and your nervous system and then avoid going to the blame, the distraction, the justification.
Yeah.
For, yeah, yes, it's a good, really good, that was true, that did happen to me.
Which I call kind of relating to that emotion from another part of your mind.
Yeah, you're
like you've stepped into a
rationalization component, and now you're no longer present.
Yeah.
So those types of things are, to me, they're skills.
Yeah.
And it has a lot to do with being able to step outside the stories of the intellect that show up, like rationalization and blaming, to step outside those and not believe those. And so as I developed the self-mastery course, working with clients that then developed into the self-mastery course was, oh, getting people to separate from these stories, rationalization, blaming, this victim perspective, the righteousness perspective, then we could do the emotional work. Mm-hmm. But they needed that skill levels of separate, get control of their attention from the stories that would distract them.
Yeah, and another skill that I talked about in the last episode, and also if you listen to that episode, I also dropped a link to the Being With What Is workshop that is free in the self-mastery community, that where you can go and learn these skills a little more and practice them. But I also talk about a skill that is actually telling sensing from thinking. That a lot of the time we are relating to ourselves from our thinking mind. So even when we think we are feeling, we're actually thinking about having a feeling or thinking about what my right foot feels like. And we create a mind image about my right foot, and I'm relating to that image in my mind rather than actually feeling, sensing my foot. So for me, that's also like a skill that we have not practiced. And oftentimes, yeah, people are not able to tell the difference between sensing and thinking, because it's not somewhere where we put our attention and are curious about, wait a minute, am I in the thinking or in the sensing, and what is the difference?
That's a very valuable distinction. A very often used in denial of what we're feeling.
In what way?
No, you're in the idea of something instead of in the feeling of something.
Yeah.
You know, our mind can make a virtual reality image of, like you said, a foot, of an experience.
Yeah.
And can make it a virtual reality version of ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And we can have our attention on there and perceiving what that virtual reality image feels, not be in touch with what being held in the body.
Yeah.
And really kind of be hypnotized into the idea of this is who we are, this is how we feel.
Yeah, not seeing the difference, because we're not used to being outside of our minds, outside of that kind of identification and believing that narrative of the mind, whether that narrative shows up in words or in images or ideas, concepts.
It happens, you know, in the casual conversation. Hey, how are you today? Mm. I'm fine. Mm. Like, we tell the story so casually and intentionally, like, don't want to burden this other person with what we're angry or grieving or sad about. And, well, we'll just keep that inside. But in the process, we've pushed it down. We've been practicing a lie and a kind of masking of it, dishonesty with ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And it stays stuck.
Yeah.
You know, we do that over time with ourselves. I go, this is the person I'm supposed to be for everybody else.
Yeah.
There's no room for me.
Yeah.
To feel this. Because I got to be busy being this person for everybody else.
Yeah.
And let's not, and here's another way, you know, we talk about not feeling them. If I feel this, they'll be uncomfortable.
Mm. Beliefs about what my emotions are causing for other people.
Yeah, I was at an event, and we were in a group, and somebody was crying. They had a very emotional process. They were crying, and she told me later it was a really powerful thing that happened with her. That, you know, she's like, I should go. I'm making other people uncomfortable. I'm like, you stay right there.
Yeah.
What you're doing is fine. You're crying. You're feeling emotions. That's a normal human thing.
Mm-hmm.
The idea that we're making somebody uncomfortable, that's the thing we've learned to repress what we feel. The idea that these other people can't handle emotions is an idea that then suppresses what we feel, or that we have to go run and hide. This is something that's bad.
Yeah.
And so I said, you're fine.
Yeah.
It's okay to feel what you feel. And she was like, felt this relief because she had never heard that before.
Mm.
And it set the tone for the group. It's like, we're going to be real and honest. And it's, I think, something we do in the community that's like, we're not trying to put our Facebook image out there. We're trying to be honest and say, this is real life.
And emotions are welcome here.
Emotion, that's because that's real life. They're here.
But that idea, and I talked about it in the last episode, like that idea in the mind, that belief that my emotional reactions are causing other people to be uncomfortable, or I'm creating something uncomfortable with having my emotions. I mean, it didn't get created out of nothing, huh?
No.
It's part of something that we have internalized, a domestication, a way of being in society, that we are now taking on the role to domesticate ourselves, to domesticate our, you know, our emotional body with the mind, having the mind make sure that the emotions and the unconscious and is in check.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you see parents in the grocery store, the restaurant, you're like, okay, sit down, be quiet, be still. It's like this child has all this energy and they're having a temper tantrum, and they're like, you get shamed and you stop that and you be quiet, and you're like,
because the parent feels uncomfortable about what the child is causing.
Exactly. The parent's like wants to suppress their feeling.
Yeah.
And the way they do it is, I'm going to control this other person so I stop having a reaction.
Yeah.
You know, if a parent was like, wow, my child is really angry, they're having temper tantrum, let's let this play out, and they let them feel what they feel, like that would be okay too. So this difference in, you know, that's domestication. And then there's, you're just describing this auto-domestication, as the term Miguel uses, is like where we automatically, we've learned to do that. We learn, look around and say, oh, other people are going to shame us. Other people are going to tell us to be quiet and go away and make the ourselves suppress that. So I'll just do it before they do because it's coming.
Yeah.
And that way I can avoid that criticism. So we repress our own emotions as soon as other people are around. And now we've auto-domesticated, repressed.
Yeah.
Ourselves, and after years, we do it automatically, and we're not even aware that, they're all repressed. That they're all
locked down. In the split of a second, we just go into that automated pattern without even knowing the steps that happened before.
Yeah, it's as you know, you don't think about driving your car after a while. It's hitting the brake or turn signals and. You just end up at the destination. You don't remember all the things you did to get there. It's more automatic than that because we started doing it at 2 years old.
Yeah. So now it's been passed from the conscious mind of a conscious choice of doing it into your automated, unconscious mind, which runs the reactions. Mm-hmm. So, now that we're talking about it and diving into it, you can kind of understand that then the process of actually getting in touch with your emotions might be a little tricky. It might be some resistance, not the getting in touch with emotions itself, but the things that are in the way, the things that will object about you going there.
Like other people around, like your own stories, like your own not wanting to feel fear and distractions.
Yeah. Or even like automated responses like that. So if you do go to sit down and like, okay, I'm going to be present with my emotions. What is likely to show up?
Everything else.
Yeah.
Everything else.
Yeah.
All the stories of what we learned, you know, our parents telling us, you sit down, be quiet, you behave, you be a good girl, you be a good boy.
Mm.
You know, don't be angry.
Yeah. And this is where people often go into the justification or the explanation of that happening to like, oh, that doesn't work for me. My mind's got, you know, my monkey's got ADHD. I hear that a lot. Like I have especially loud chatter in my mind. I can't be still. But I mean, it's actually proof that you got a really genius protective mechanism that's working very efficiently.
And here's the thing about this protective mechanism, typically call it the denial system that keeps us from feeling these emotions that are basically stored inside.
Mm.
There's an unprocessed memory and storage of emotion. People are like, damn it, I want to really get to these emotions because I really want to solve these problems. And now they've spent unconsciously years repressing them. And now they get into this work, like, okay, well, these repressed emotions that come out uncontrolled with my anger, with my jealousy, like, let's get to them. And they, like, feel really frustrated that they can't get to them.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, they're like, I don't feel them. Mm-hmm. And they're like, I don't feel my emotions. And I've literally had clients tell me, I don't feel any emotion. But I'm like, I'm really frustrated that I don't feel my emotions. You're like, oh, are you feeling frustrated? Yeah. Well, then you feel an emotion. And like they don't realize what that's the one in the moment. They're trying to get to something else, or they're angry, or they feel inadequate because they're not getting the job done.
Or an idea that they're going for an idea in the mind of what that emotion is or feel like that they're going to find.
And here's the thing that I tell people. This thing that you think the denial mechanism, the suppression of emotion that you say is a problem, take a moment to just go, thank God it's there. Because without the skills of controlling your attention, when you feel those emotions and, you know, okay, what if all the anger you have stored up came out at once?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And you didn't yet learn the skills of directing your own attention or not believing the story that's going to come out with it. Mm-hmm. You know, you're going to believe the blame. You're going to believe the righteousness that comes with it. You're going to believe who should be punished for it. If you feel all that anger, it's going to sweep you away into, you know, blame and punishment of somebody else.
Yeah.
And so you want that lid to come off slowly. You want that denial system there. It's served you very well for years.
Yeah.
And so take some time to appreciate it because it's served you well. And then recognize something else. This powerful denial system that you're using to hold all that stuff inside, that's not, I mean, you could use the story as like, oh, what's the matter with me that I can't take it apart? Flip the story and say, wow, how powerful then am I? Let's give you a clue to the power you have to create this whole edifice of a wall to inhibit you perceiving and being overwhelmed by your emotions. Like, that is very cool that you were able to magically create that. And if you can magically create that unconsciously, you can do a lot more if you put your conscious intent there. So take a moment to appreciate your power. Take a moment that it protected you and have some gratitude, or at least maybe not be so frustrated. These are important steps in that. Let's move into feeling emotions.
Yeah.
That, you know, you can find a different story than, oh, I'm doing it wrong, I'm frustrated, I'm failing at this. You're like, well, freaking heck no. I'm a pretty amazing that I'm badass that I created this whole edifice to protect me.
What a genius structure.
Yeah.
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 No, exactly. And I something with that of it becomes fun after a while also of actually seeing how it's been constructed. It's a bit of a, you know, architect or engineering puzzle of like, oh my God, how is this all fitted together? The layer after the layer. So it's also that like kind of awe of, oh my God, it's kind of genius in its construction. And if you're just trying to get past that and get to the end result, you're kind of skipping seeing this, how the mind actually functions, because taking it apart and being present with the protection layers too, I mean, it teaches you so much about your internal world and, yeah, how your mind has been functioning.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a brilliant, amazing piece of machinery, organism, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And you don't get to those emotions through frustration. You don't get to it through, you know, just prying in there mm-hmm. aggressively. So it's like, okay, take a moment to notice that creation.
Yeah.
And be present with that emotion. Frustrated. Okay, cool. Let's start with that one.
Yeah.
Start with one. You don't want all of them. You want to practice being one at a time. You're like, oh, yeah. Okay. Until you're relaxed and you're like, when you get to a point where you're like, because at first you'd be like, oh crap, I don't want this. And you judge it and, you know, I don't want to feel this way. And then you're like, you know, okay. You get through it and you're like, oh, I feel better after releasing that anger. Oh, I feel better after releasing that fear. And you're like, but then you feel the trepidation of like, oh, there's another fear. Okay, I don't want to feel that one. But it gets to feel good when I let go of it. Like, and so you learn this release, this expansive relief feeling in your body. Yeah. It feels bigger. You feel this wide open space around you. And after you do that a number of times, you're like, well, I like finding the fears because mm-hmm. I get this reward of expansiveness and freedom to move, and my body feels lighter afterwards. And then the hunting your fears or those emotional reactions becomes fun.
Yeah.
But
because you're getting rewarded and you're gaining more personal power and freedom and not having to use your energy to keep this protection mechanism in place so that you can keep them suppressed. Yeah.
But you need to get some small wins one at a time.
Yeah.
In a manageable amount and go, okay, that process goes okay.
Because start practicing the skill of actually being with your emotions before you go for the big ones.
Oh yeah, don't do them all at once.
Yeah.
You know, that's so yeah, look for small wins.
So on a more personal note, how's your own journey with accessing, getting in touch with both your emotions and your body been? I'm just, you're a male.
Good. Good. Yeah, correct.
From the United States. From a Western kind of culture that way. And like, how was it growing up and how's that journey been for you of getting it? Was that a thing that you learned when you grew up, being in touch with your emotions?
That's ridiculously funny. No, certainly not. My parents are from Northern Europe, and they came over in the 50s, and you know, not real present with the emotions.
Mm-hmm.
Poor, so it was about a lot of hard work. Mm-hmm. And there was like, hey, you have, you know, food on the table, you have roof over your head. That's enough.
Yeah, we don't have time for emotions. That's
yeah, be thankful, be grateful. Like you have a happy life.
Yeah.
So I mean, they both were in Holland during World War II growing up.
Mm.
So there's peace in the country. There's not a German occupation. This life is good.
Yeah.
But I didn't understand it at the time what I was being domesticated in, but it was, I'd say the American culture is how you get to be happy is you go to school, you get good grades, you get a good education, you get a good job, you make some money, you have a successful career, you have a good relationship, you're kind to that person, their person's kind to you, and then you're happy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so either success in career and you know, a relationship where you're good to them, they're good to you, boom, that's success. And success, then that's through accomplishment, you get emotions.
Sounds more like an idea of happiness than
yes.
the actual thing.
Yeah, but that's the formula that's kind of trickled down and reinforced every time you get a good grade. Oh, I feel good about myself.
Yeah.
Oh, I got a good star. I feel good about myself. Oh, I brought my report card home. Oh, you did great. You're so smart. I feel good about myself. I feel praised.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I'm feeding my emotional body on is other people's opinions of me.
Yeah.
That's where I'm like, oh, I'm great. I feel good about myself.
You get your dopamine from.
I get my dopamine and my self-esteem by accomplishing things that other people have set the standards for.
Mm-hmm.
None of this has to do with what I want.
No.
Okay.
Yeah.
None of this has to do with
just
my own.
Just a reward system that keeps you going that, for more.
That other people have set up.
Yeah.
You know, and then get a job and now I want promotions. I want good reviews on my performance. I want a raise. I want money. And so the goals are still external and decided by somebody else.
Yeah.
That then I'm looking to get my dopamine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think something burned out for me in the military, in the Navy, when, you know, they don't give a lot of praise.
You didn't get your dopamine?
I did not get my dopamine. I did not get the pat on the backs.
Yeah.
I was not giving myself pat on the backs for dopamine.
Mm.
I was trained at that point to just look externally for praise.
Ah.
I didn't know it. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But after a while, I'm just kind of feeling empty and burned out. I've been working harder and harder, and I'm burned out, and I'm like, this doesn't feel good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was later when I backed away, and I was like, oh, my God, I was looking for all the external rewards. But the military is not set up that way, okay? And a lot of Western society is not set up that way. Our brains are trained to say, oh, that's a problem. You missed one on the test. Like, you got 99. But they're pointing out the one you got wrong.
It wasn't perfect.
Okay. And I see this with my clients who are doctors or who have the PhD or in a PhD program. Like, their bar for perfection is so high.
Mm-hmm.
Any little detail, they feel inadequate. Mm-hmm. You know, they compare themselves. Oh, my peer is doing this research project and they're getting this grant. And now it's like, I didn't, you know, mine didn't come through. It's like, they might be doing great work.
Yeah.
A medical doctor can be saving people's lives. They look for the one thing. Oh, I'm not seeing as many patients in my group as the other guy is.
So I'm noticing a little bit of a sidetrack here. Are you trying to avoid talking about your emotions?
No, I'm pointing out how we in society elevate the success, create the success formula that says this is what success will be. And when you get success, you'll be happy. Of course, it's that carrot out there on the stick that's always out of reach.
And that's what you experienced.
That's what I experienced.
Yeah. So how did that shift then for you? How was the process of getting in touch with your emotions for you? And where are you at with it today, being in your body or versus your head? How does that process look like for you?
It broke for me in the Navy. I was burned out and tired.
Yeah.
I was exhausted. Relationship drama, I'm like, I'm miserable here. Mm. And I was in enough emotional angst, stress, disappointment, and physical burnout that I was too tired to run that race anymore, mm-hmm. to try and get the praise. And I was like, I had enough awareness to realize this isn't going to work. It doesn't show up in the Navy, and it's not showing up in the criticisms of my relationship. I'm like, okay, reset. Mm-hmm. What do I really want? I'm like, I want to be happy. I don't want the relationship. I want what the relationship's supposed to give me, which is to be happy. I don't want a successful career. I want successful career is supposed to give me, which is fulfillment and happiness and those good emotions. Yeah. And I realized relationship is a means. What I wanted was the end value. Mm-hmm. Career was a means. I wanted the end value. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I'm using the wrong means. Mm. It's not going to come through achieving others, people's approval or an external reward and their acknowledgement of me. I'm like, where does this motion actually come from? Where does fulfillment and gratitude and love and happiness and joy, where does that actually come from? Because the way the world is set up, particularly economically, was not going to get me there.
Yeah.
I needed a different map because the map I was using was taking me to the wrong place.
So how did that look like, feel like in your body, doing that process of like kind of re-entering your body, getting in touch with what you really wanted, feeling into your body?
Do you know when you have two magnets and they're both north poles?
Yeah.
And you try and push them together?
Yeah.
It was like that.
Okay.
Okay.
It was something like pushing back.
I was like, I was in the narrative story. I had left the relationship and left the Navy, and I was like, okay, this whole life blew up. And all the thoughts in my head were like, oh, she shouldn't have done this, and she did this wrong, and why couldn't she be this way? Mm-hmm. And my job was this way, and why were they such jerks? You know, it was like them, blame, 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 frustration, anger, judgment, righteousness, them, right?
Directed over there.
I had a conversation with a woman who was going through recovery. Her husband had been an alcoholic, and she was trying to put the family together after she had separated. And she's like, I need to do things completely differently. And she's like, one was, I got to tell myself the truth. I can't do the lies anymore. I got to take responsibility because I chose to be here. I have a part in my life that I'm responsible for. I chose to be here and I chose to stay. Mm-hmm. And as I'm doing these stories of blaming somebody else, God, what she had told me that day, like is just echoing. And I'm seeing myself blame somebody else, you know, which feels good in the righteousness, but miserable in everything else, you know, the anger and the frustration and the hurt. But I was like, I gotta tell the truth. I don't do the lies anymore. I was like, and what's my half? Mm-hmm. And it was like, as I sat with that, and that took, you know, I'm in a long drive through Iowa and Nebraska and the cornfields, and it's like there's not any distractions, right?
Just you and your emotions.
Me watching the thoughts go in my head and go, oh, what's my half? And I had to bring it back and bring it back and bring it back. And as I did, there was this disgusting vomit, pukey feeling in my stomach that I'm like, I've chosen to be in that relationship. I chose that job and that career. Mm-hmm. I chose to believe these stories that I wasn't even conscious of. Like, I did it unconsciously.
Yeah.
But I'm responsible. And I was able to do it, I don't know how, without any blame, just this kind of remorse, like, oh, But then something very thing like my, I sat with this ugly, weight of the notion that I'd created my life this way, my relationships this way, mm-hmm. this heaviness of responsibility. And I don't know if it was like the next, and that sat with me all day. And the next day in the drive, you know, to the rest of Nebraska, I'm sitting with that feeling. And I go, I had the realization like, well, okay, if I'm responsible, that means I had the power. I created my life that way.
Yeah.
And if I created that much misery unconsciously, what would happen if I created my life to be joyful, to be happy? Like, I have the power to create my life differently then. And I began to feel this hope. I began to feel like there's possibility. I said, what do I want to create? What do I want to create instead? And this goes back to noticing your power to create your own emotions, your own denial system, your own misery, mm-hmm. the power you created with your mind and the narrative stories. We've all given life to those unconsciously.
Yeah.
What happens if we take charge, take the steering wheel, and we change it and create a different story? Like, we can do that equally as powerfully. Yeah. And so I can start to feel that power and the desire, like, I want to use my power. And I don't even know what this power is, but I know how I want to use it now. Mm-hmm. And I decided that I wanted to be happy no matter what. Mm-hmm. And that was the most important thing in my life.
So you have an engineer background.
Yeah.
Your mind is quite analytical, and you're also teaching this work to people that are quite intellectual, analytical, that wants to understand the why and how pieces fit together.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of want to see, like, is there hope for us, for these people that, you know, that are analytical and used to being in our heads? What does that balance look for you today in your everyday life, in your morning routine, whatever it is, to like balance being in your mind, in your head, and in your body, present with your emotion, like something very concrete, practical? What does that practice, that transition between the two, the balance between the two, what does it look like for you today?
I think some people, when they think they're going to get into their emotions, there's this overreaction of fears that are going to show up. I'm going to lose my mind. It's going to overwhelm me. What's the balance look like today? How do I describe normal me? How I feel.
How do you go between these states of the mind, of listening to the mind and being in the mind and, you know, working or whatever you do up there? do you have like a conscious practice of being in your body, feeling into your body?
It's evolving. You know, I had an injury to my knee about a year ago. And it made me really aware of like the pain that I felt in my body. I mean, this is ongoing. Mm. And I noticed, you know, I have these tight muscles and I'm beginning massage and doing yoga and stretching, but like there's still knots in my muscles. I'm like, what's in there? Mm-hmm. And so there's this ongoing effort to be really present with what my muscles are feeling and how my quads or hamstrings are tight.
Yeah.
And you know, here's the latest iteration. Realize I've pushed my body, you know, in sports when I was younger, if I'd go hiking later, I'd like try and, you know, just get a really good, strong exercise. Mm-hmm. I would push my body and it felt great and all the endorphins are kicking in, but my body paid a price. Mm-hmm. And so now I'm like, oh, let me be gentle and kind to it. And so I've slowed down my exercise. I'm more present as I walk and how much what I do. And so this is a longer cycle, but switching back and forth during the day, you know, I can take a moment just when I take a breath.
Yeah.
Right here in the conversation with you. And I feel different. I'm really present with my breath and kind of the pleasure of breathing. Mm-hmm. Okay. As I can still hold a conversation with you.
Yeah.
All right, so it's that subtle. Mm-hmm. If I'm talking to a client and I'm aware of, okay, they're telling me about their life problems, I can use my mind to pay attention, and I use my awareness of my body with how I'm breathing, how I feel, to be holding and listening with love and compassion. So I'm using my mind and I'm feeling with my whole body love and compassion for them. Okay? So I can use both at the same time.
Yeah.
And sometimes if I'm going to sit in meditation, I'm like, okay, I want to go into full feeling. And then not so much talking at all. There's no mind chatter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then I'll just go into that full feeling and make it as expansive as possible.
So that your full palate, that full palate is kind of available to you when you can drop into the different parts of your being at different times with your will, with directing your attention there.
Yeah, if I notice something that's in my body that feels like a tension or an uncomfortable emotion, I'm like, let me pause what I'm doing and just drop into it. What's behind it? What tension am I feeling? Oh, I'm trying to get too much work done. I don't have time for my personal life or other commitment that I made. I'm feeling, my schedule is not giving me the free time I want. Like, okay. So all of that becomes a little nuanced, but what happens is how I feel becomes, my compass for how I want to live.
Mm.
It's like, oh, you know what? That was a really long day. Or that stressed my schedule out trying to do too many things. Like, okay, note to self. Change course, reschedule my time differently.
Yeah.
Okay.
So you're feeling into your body and how and your emotional body becomes your compass.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So it sounds like you've shifted that relationship with the mind, then suppressing the body and feeling like it's on top of the hierarchy of the food chain. It's instead, no, I'm using my mind to support my body. I'm using my mind to put my attention in my body and with my emotions and using that as the compass, not the idea of how you should be living or being or who you should be.
Are there more phone calls that I should do and more things to put on my schedule, more projects to finish? It's like, yeah, I could, but let me take them in a way that feels good.
Yeah.
And so that determines the speed at which I take on projects. Mm-hmm. So that's the compass part.
Beautiful.
Of it.
Yeah.
So it's very, very much regulating, the food I eat, how much exercise I do, over-exercising, noticing what I eat and going, afterwards that doesn't feel good. Okay, note to self, don't eat that many potato chips. Okay. So I'm like,
good. Okay. So I think that's a beautiful kind of description or a way of giving an image or a map for that journey, huh? From the mind, from the head down into the heart. A more heart-centered living, a more in touch with the body instead of the mind, and then the program of the mind overriding all of that.
The program of the mind, that's the way it used to be. And now it's like, how do I want to feel? And that dictating, okay, mind, this is how much we're going to work on this project today, and this is how much free time we have, and this is how we're going to schedule our week. This is what we're going to do in the business. But it's based on how I feel, not on accomplishing something and thinking I'm going to get a feeling as a result.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's my happiness over my mind and my will and attention over my mind. And I just use my mind to accomplish the things that my happiness and joy want to do.
Sounds like there's a trust also then in the body and the heart, what you feel, a trust in what you feel, a trust in what you want, instead of having to override it with the mind.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Love, the emotional component of truth is love.
Mm-hmm.
The emotional component of truth is joy. And it's comes with this quiet mind. And so that clarity, if the mind's really busy with chatter, I'm moving away from truth and love.
Thank you so much for talking about emotions with me. It was really nice. having the conversation with you and exploring it.
Good conversation. Mm-hmm. Good stuff in there, I hope.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thank you for listening. Do you want to tune in live with me over video next week? Then head over to selfmasteryandbeyond.com for instructions. And if this was helpful to you, I appreciate a review in the podcast app that you're using. Until next week.